Good morning, early birds. You've caught the worm. A podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio and our friends in the public media spectrum across the Yellowstone region, bringing you the latest headlines. I'm Carl Lengel. It's the 24th of July, 2026, a Friday. It's been a little over 4 years since the U.S. Supreme Court overturned the right to an abortion. Many states banned or severely restricted access since then. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports the Dobbs decision also impacted Montana, where abortion access is enshrined in the state constitution.
The Guttmacher Institute is a nonprofit research organization that supports abortion. Guttmacher has been collecting data on how many people access abortion for decades. There were nearly 2,600 abortions in Montana last year, says Guttmacher data scientist Isaac Maddow-Zimmet.
It is a pretty big increase from the number of abortions that were occurring in Montana pre-Dobbs.
Montana saw a roughly 50% increase in the number of abortions after the Supreme Court's ruling in 2022. That increase isn't coming from people traveling from neighboring states where abortion is banned or restricted. It's more Montanans accessing abortion.
And one of the big things that changed post-Dobbs is a broad infrastructure sprung up of abortion funds, practical support organizations, other kinds of support from providers themselves, to try to make sure that cost was not a barrier to people accessing care.
Many funds were aiming to help people cross state lines to access abortion, but organizations in states like Montana also benefited. They were able to help more people get and pay for care in the state. The Dobbs decision also accelerated the build-out of telehealth services. That's allowed more people to meet with a provider virtually. Over 80% of abortions in Montana are done with medications. That's well above the national average of 65%. Maddow-Zimmet says in a way, the Dobbs decision increased access to abortion care in Montana. In Columbia Falls, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Wildfire smoke is blanketing much of western Montana. Parts of the Flathead and Bitterroot Valleys had air quality considered unhealthy for sensitive groups. Forecasters say a high-pressure system will continue to send smoke from wildfires in Oregon and Washington for the foreseeable future. Public health officials say people sensitive to smoke should limit their time outdoors. They also say people should find ways to create clean air spaces in their homes. You can do that with a HEPA filter or even by attaching a furnace filter to a box fan. Make sure the filter is rated to filter out PM2.5 particulate. Researchers continue to find forever chemicals in Montana's waterways. The latest samples come from Flathead Lake. Montana Public Radio's Victoria Traxler reports advocates are calling for more attention and funding to research these substances.
Flathead Lake Biostation Director Jim Elzer says when they started to look for PFAS at sites in the area,
my hope was that we wouldn't find anything, that we wouldn't detect anything really, and then we could say, okay, we don't have to worry about that so much around here. Maybe we should check back in a few years and see if anything has changed.
But that wasn't what happened. Samples from tributaries and sites on Flathead Lake identified multiple PFAS compounds, three of which were above laboratory reporting limits. This comes after the recent identification of PFAS in the Fort Peck Reservoir, as well as the East Gallatin, Missouri, and Clark Fork Rivers. Elzer says none of the PFAS they found with statutory thresholds surpassed levels that indicate degraded drinking water quality.
This is more about raising awareness than raising alarm. I think we need to be aware that these are out there and find out more.
Current research shows a gap between where PFAS are confirmed and where they likely exist. One study found 2,200 known sites and over 80,000 presumptive PFAS sites around the country.
So this is just really the tip of the iceberg for many states.
That's Jamie DeWitt, who studies PFAS impacts on human health at Oregon State University. She's speaking at a recent panel hosted by Montana Environmental Information Center, where experts pushed for more proactive measures to mitigate PFAS contamination.
If you have a continuation of exposure, there is the potential for PFAS to build up in your blood over time. And when PFAS build up in blood, that increases the likelihood that they're going to interact with molecules within your body to produce adverse health outcomes.
Back on Flathead Lake, Elzer says for these reasons, it's important to better understand where PFAS are in Montana. But barriers like cost of equipment and access to labs delay their ability to gather more data. He says agencies don't have the funding or staff to do wide-scale surveys either. In Missoula, I'm Victoria Traxler.
July is traditionally the hottest month in Montana, and as YPR's Kay Erickson explains, this July is living up to the designation.
The heat is from a very strong high-pressure ridge over the Intermountain West up through the northern Rocky Mountains. Meteorologist Joe Lester with the National Weather Service Billings says these weather patterns linger.
This one is going to hang around for a little while, at least through the end of July, it looks like.
Over the next week to 10 days, the region is going to see triple-digit heat, with temperatures anywhere between 95 and 105 degrees, putting much of the region under an extreme heat watch through Sunday night. It's also been remarkably humid. Moisture in the air creates humid days and nights.
You know, the water in the air is able to hold the heat much longer, so you don't cool off at night as much as you would with a drier air mass.
The change will come next month.
We start to see a little more of that breakdown with a periodic cold front coming into the area, especially as we move in towards the middle of August.
In Billings, I'm Kay Erickson.
Montana's mule deer population is on an upswing, according to a survey results released by Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. Montana Public Radio's A.J. Williams has more.
The agency attributes the increase in fawn recruitment, meaning those who survive past their first winter, to mild winter weather, which expanded the deer's forageable range earlier in the spring. According to FWP, the state's mule deer population is still below long-term averages, and the agency's goal remains to increase the species population. Some regions have not yet seen the increase, according to FWP's Game Management Bureau Chief, Brian Wakeling. But this year's favorable conditions and increased nutrients may aid mule deer survival next winter. Reporting from Missoula, I'm A.J. Williams.
Prices continue to march up at gas pumps across Montana amid another big jump in oil prices on Thursday. AAA reports the statewide average price of regular unleaded is well above what Montanans were paying 1 month ago. It's now at $4.28 per gallon. Similar averages are seen in Billings, Great Falls, and Missoula, all reporting prices that are about 30 cents higher than just 1 week ago. Diesel prices have also seen a similar jump, now at 4.98 cents per gallon on average across the state. The nuclear industry is seeing a big influx of federal cash. The Department of Commerce just awarded the Intermountain West Nuclear Energy Hub $31 million. Wyoming Public Radio's Hannah Mersbach has more on where this will go.
One big category is workforce development. The money will help create a national pipeline of workers. That's by bolstering training programs at community colleges and universities in Idaho and Wyoming. That includes a chemical engineering technician program at Wyoming's Gillette College.
For the last 30 years, we've watched nuclear engineering programs and other nuclear programs shut down across the country, across the globe.
Hope Morrow is with the Idaho Advanced Energy Consortium, which leads the tech hub and secured another $9 million in matching funds.
And so now we have to rebuild that base.
Morrow says dollars will also go towards bolstering supply chains, so getting manufacturers to expand into the nuclear industry. Plus, help startups get their reactors to the market quickly and be part of the solution to rising electricity demand. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Hannah Mersbach.
Continued extreme drought conditions have led to new restrictions in portions of western Wyoming. An open fire ban is now in place for all state game and fish owned and administered land in Teton, Lincoln, and Sublette counties. That means building any fire, including campfires, the use of charcoal grills, or coal or wood burning stoves, is prohibited. Smoking is also prohibited outside of a building or enclosed vehicle. Gas grills may be used, but must be accompanied by proper means of fire suppression. All internal and external combustion engines, including ATVs and motorcycles, must be equipped with an approved spark arrestor. A reminder, the National Weather Service has put multiple counties in northeast Montana under an extreme heat watch Friday through Sunday night. Weather officials warn of dangerously hot conditions with heat index values up to 101 possible. Heat-related illnesses increase significantly during extreme heat and high humidity events. They are reminding residents to drink plenty of fluids, stay in air-conditioned rooms, stay out of the sun, and check on relatives, neighbors, and pets. Buffalo, Wyoming's annual Longmire Days celebration wrapped last weekend, and the organizers are already looking ahead to next year. Buffalo's population is a little over 4,000, so when 3,000-plus people show up for the party, it's noticeable. Longmire Days is Buffalo's chance to don the town name of Absaroka and celebrate all things Walt Longmire. The idea started 14 years ago. Jennifer McCormick is the executive director of the Longmire Foundation. She says the original idea has grown substantially.
It's amazing that people still want to travel here from all over the world every year to celebrate Longmire. It's been 9 years since the last episode aired, and we thought that the public would be done with us by now, with Longmire Days, but it is that they definitely are not.
The tribute to the Western Sheriff, written by Craig Johnson, continues to experiment with new events to grow the celebration of Western culture. New to this year's celebration, a Native American Cultural Day on Thursday, which McCormick notes was very well attended.
We drew a lot of people that weren't necessarily Longmire fans for that event, who were interested in the culture and the educational experience for that day, and we're definitely going to bring that back again next year.
That's The Worm for this Friday. Catch up with us tomorrow. We'll have a special edition of The Weekend Worm for you then.
The Worm is a production of Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Metal art call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.